Welcome to the Optimal Health Podcast from Hudson Physicians, getting you back to optimal health when you're feeling sick, stressed, overwhelmed, or run down. Today's discussion is with Dr. Gary Schwartz from Associated Eye Care, and we will center our talks around the pending move across the highway from here in their current Hudson Physicians building and how that'll benefit patients and the practice as a whole for Dr. Schwartz's group. And we'll also look at the importance of our eyes, exams, and the treatment of them. A little bit more to talk about Dr. Schwartz. He's got a great career that he's brewed up that began in 1995, as he's been with Associated Eye Care ever since. He received his degree in ophthalmology from Boston University in 1991. He completed his ophthalmology residency at the University of Minnesota in 95. He's been stuck here ever since. Dr. Schwartz is a comprehensive ophthalmologist with a special interest in problems of the ocular surface. He devotes most of his surgery time to cataract surgery and refractive surgical procedures such as LASIK and PRK. Dr. Schwartz is also, this is impressive stuff, folks. You're lucky to have this. Most people have to pay for this kind of a guest, and we're getting it for free here. He's an adjunct associate professor of ophthalmology at the University of Minnesota. He's received awards for his skills as a teacher there as well. But he's also authored two books, The Eye Exam and Around the Eye in 365 Days. Dr. Schwartz has served on the Board of Trustees of the American Academy of Ophthalmology and as a president of the Minnesota Academy of Ophthalmology. You're distinguished, you're experienced, a good guy. We talked a lot of Boston, Bruins hockey. I mean, we're good. How are you? It's good to have you on board.
I'm great, thanks. It's great to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
Really looking forward to talking about this and what you do. And you know, before we get into this, I'd like to know a little bit more about what drove you into this practice and when you went through med school. And did you know right away that you wanted to focus on this, or how did you come to working with ophthalmology?
Well, I always thought eye care was interesting. Since I was a kid, I got into glasses at a young age and contact lenses, and that was my basic exposure to healthcare, because I was, you know, as a reasonably healthy kid growing up, so I wasn't in the hospital much. So as I was going through college and decided to go to medical school, when we learned about the eye on that first year medical school lecture from, you know, an eye doctor somewhere in Boston, it was something clicked, and I said, wow, this is really cool. I'll look more into it. And as I did my rotations in medical school and saw some surgeries and clinic time, I thought, wow, this is really interesting. The eye is interesting. What the healthy eye can do is interesting. How pathology in the eye presents is interesting. The way we can fix things with either glasses or contact lenses or surgery or eye drops is interesting. It's all interesting. And sure enough, 25 years later, I still find it interesting. So I got lucky.
Here you are. So from day one, 25 years ago to today, if you were to look back and see what's evolved from when you first started, what's some of the biggest things that you think, you look and say, wow, I can't believe we're here. And then what are some of the things that have been kind of a constant in that part of the practice?
That's a great question. So the biggest thing that's evolved in eye care, which is similar to most of medicine, is just how much easier everything has gotten for the patient. So just before I did my eye doctor training, cataract surgery was a week in the hospital, followed by a lifetime in very thick glasses. So that was life in the 70s. Things started to shift in the 80s. Nowadays, cataract surgery takes a typical surgeon somewhere between 5 and 15 minutes. Patients are driving a car the next day. They're golfing or working in the garden the next day. But not only that, their vision without glasses after surgery is typically better than their vision was for much of their life. In regards to not needing glasses to drive, we can put multifocal lens implants in the time of cataract surgery, which means that people don't need to wear glasses to read, potentially. So we can take people who have been in glasses since they were 10, 11, 12 years old. When they're 70, do cataract surgery on them, and many patients realistically never put on a pair of glasses again.
What type of feedback do you get when that happens from someone who's 70 and says, whoa?
Yeah, that's the fun part of the job, you know? Mm-hmm. So the two main surgeries I do are LASIK, where we take a healthy 35-year-old who wants surgery to get out of glasses, and cataract surgery, where we take 75, 80-year-olds and do a surgery that not only gets them to see better, but gets them to see better without glasses. And all of that without a lot of downtime. You know, they're back the next day, a lot of times driving themselves. It's fantastic. You know, they come in so, you know, grateful and thankful and excited. And if we do one eye, they can't wait for 2 weeks later when we do the other eye. And so we get people who are excited to have surgery, which is a rarity in medicine.
Wouldn't you think?
Yeah.
So from that, how many people, when you say, you know, we're going to do this procedure, what type of reactions do you get or feedback? What do you think the public's general? I mean, are they thinking they're going to be in the 70s with the glasses that Bubbles from Trailer Park Boys wears? Or I mean, what do you hear from them?
So it's, I mean, almost everybody knows someone who's had cataract surgery. So some people, their memory of it is when their parents had surgery in 75, and that's what they come in with. But most people, you know, most 80-year-olds, they know some friends who've had cataract surgery. But the typical reaction, so most people need both eyes done. We usually do their two eyes 2 weeks apart. Most people are very apprehensive about having the first eye done, and they can't wait to have the second eye done. And that's kind of the fun part, is they all kind of are very nervous. We see them in pre-op. They're anxious. They don't know what to expect. They think it's going to be this horrible ordeal. And then we see them post-op day one, and they're like, "Doc, when can we do the other one? This is great."
Wow. And so do they have, are you a little off balance with what,
a lot of
that's
people
probably
are.
Why they wanted to say.
A lot of people are. Yeah, that's the hardest part for some people, is the 2 weeks in between. Yeah.
Just realizing just how good it can be.
Yeah.
So other types of surgeries that you provide, you know, you can go down the list from retinal surgeries to glaucoma, cornea, all the other stuff.
Right.
What's the level of, I mean, there's anything you guys don't do, correct?
There's some neuro-ophthalmology stuff we don't do, some sophisticated oculoplastic stuff we don't do, but in our group, we're a 15-doctor group. We have fellowship-trained retina specialists, cornea specialists, glaucoma specialists, two pediatric specialists who all do surgery. So we, you know, we call ourselves cradle to grave. We are the largest provider of pediatric eye care in this area, bigger than the U, bigger than the Mayo Clinic, bigger than the Children's Hospital System. And we have a retina specialist who treats patients with macular degeneration, and we have a glaucoma specialist who treats a lot of elderly patients with glaucoma. So you can kind of tell who's working that day by who's in the waiting room.
Sure.
If it's a bunch of three-year-olds.
Oh, it's him.
Yeah,
her.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Got it. So then in terms, you know, to get to that point, you know, there's talk about annual eye exams.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say you're a person, you know, many of us have had them since we were little, you know, like you mentioned, myself too. And then as you get older, maybe you stabilize and maybe don't go in as often as you should.
Mm-hmm.
Can you speak to the importance of getting that eye exam and what you're catching and seeing by doing so?
Sure. So that raises a huge question is, you know, I'm a healthy, you know, pick an age, 25-year-old, 35-year-old, 45-year-old. Why do I need to come in? You know, I'm not like the dentist where not only you're looking for cavities, but you're also doing a cleaning. You know, what's the need? And the basic need for a routine eye exam in asymptomatic people who don't wear glasses is glaucoma. Almost everything else has symptoms of some sort. If you need glasses, you'll know it because you have a hard time seeing, or you fail the driver's test or something. If your eye is red or irritated, or you see things floating in your vision, or your eyes are crossed, all of those have symptoms. But glaucoma doesn't. And if we rely on people to come in to see us because they have vision loss from glaucoma, it's way too late to help them typically. And if you lose vision from glaucoma, we can't restore it. So the whole treatment is geared toward preventing vision loss. And the only way to do that is to measure people and examine people and evaluate people to see if they're at risk for getting it. So in that way, it's kind of like high blood pressure. You know, why does a healthy 30-year-old have to go to see their regular doctor? Well, one of the things they do is they measure your blood pressure. And if your blood pressure is high, that puts you at risk for certain things, stroke, heart attack. Well, glaucoma is like that with eye pressure. So if you have a number of people walking around with high eye pressure who don't know it, you're at risk for getting glaucoma. So the reason that anybody over the age of 20 is supposed to come in every couple of years and anyone over the age of 40 is supposed to come in every year is more than anything else to look for that one disease which has no symptoms and no signs.
What does a typical eye exam look like?
An eye exam, so if you have a routine eye exam with us, you're typically going to be there for about anywhere from an hour, hour and a half or so. You get your vision checked with or without your glasses, depending if you wear them. You get remeasured for glasses. You get the pressure in your eyes checked. various things like that.
How do you do that? Motility.
There are devices for it, with numbing drops mostly.
I say it. Yeah.
And then you get your eyes dilated, you get your pupils dilated, and then one of the doctors comes and looks at you, and we just kind of look at everything from front to back, from the eyelids and things like that at the front end through all the structures, cornea, iris, lens, and look at the retina in the back. It's a very, you know, visual, no pun intended, field where, because most structures in the eye are transparent, that's how you can see out, that allows us to see in.
Oh.
And that's
interesting.
That's the fun part of being an eye doctor, in my opinion, is, you know, if you go to a GI specialist because you're having problems with your colon, or you go to a heart specialist because you're having problems with your heart or aorta, they have to do a fair amount of gymnastics to visualize where your problem is. They're either scoping you or they're scanning you or something. We're just, you know, put your chin in this device, open your eyes wide, and let me have a look in there. So that's the satisfying thing. That's why most people who end up as eye doctors do it, is because we love that. Let me just look and see what you have, and then we can talk about it.
Have you ever been surprised when you know, not that you judge a book by its cover, but you're going, you know, hearing, I think we're going to have this, and then you look in there and you go,
Yeah.
Does that ever happen?
Yeah, that's another fun part of the job is, you know, I'll see, you know, because the eye is so easy to access, we can see a fair number of patients in a day. So it's not uncommon for an eye doctor to see, you know, 25, 30, 40 patients.
That's why you did it.
So,
kidding.
So when we grab that chart off the door, you don't know what you're going to find. Even if you review the chart in front, you're like, oh, this is a, you know, 72-year-old woman who comes with this complaint, whatever. When you go in the room and you look in the eye, yeah, it's once a day, twice a day, you see something that you're totally not expecting to see.
Wow.
And we have students and residents that rotate through our offices too. Mm-hmm. So we do some teaching as well. And that's one of the things that we teach them is, like, you know, when you walk in, it's like, you don't, it could be anything.
You almost have to expect the unexpected.
Yeah,
because
if you
if you get cookie cutter, it's not.
Exactly.
But that's the cool part about the fact that, you know, you go back to what you said earlier, that you can see.
Yeah.
And you're not guessing and probing particularly.
Right.
And I think that's a really, I think as a, from a patient's perspective, a very calming situation.
Right.
Because you've got a really, you know what's going on, and there's really not many surprises where, well, a misdiagnosis, I guess, what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's. I mean, we get it right most of the time, but that's part. It's like dermatology in a large degree. You know, you say to the dermatologist, you point to something on your skin and say, what is this, doc? You know, and it's just, but it's more like we have to go in there and find it, because most people can't point to the inside of their eye and say, what is this, doc?
Yeah, really, I've got. Blue blockers. This is a topic of conversation, or blue lenses in the media so much lately. You know, I know a company that created these glasses that have this. They're dark, and they have this little yellow thing that helps you with focus, and it may be helping with post-concussion symptoms and things. Like, a lot of athletes have been using those. Can you talk about that whole phenomenon?
Sure.
If it's really, is that voodoo, or is it really good? And then how, if it is something to wear, is there, can you wear them too often, type of thing?
Sure. Okay. So, you know, we get a lot of questions about blue blockers. The basic story behind blue blocker lenses is they do make a lot of people feel more comfortable. I do recommend them for a lot of patients. But there's not a lot of science saying that you're protecting the eye from any real disease or anything. What it probably boils down to is, over the tens of thousands of years that the human eye evolved, you're looking at solid things.
Mm-hmm.
So even in the last few couple thousand years, where we can look at the printed word is written on a solid piece of paper. And with that, your brain knows the exact distance, and it can make some calculations and figure out what it needs to do to bring that in focus. When you look at a light, like if you were to look at a headlight of an oncoming car or something, you can't tell, your brain doesn't know the distance that light is. It's just kind of a blinding thing, and your brain just has to do a little bit of fudging to try to figure out how to bring that into focus. Well, when you're looking at a computer screen, as much as modern computer screens or Kindle or iPad or whatever simulates a written page, at its core, it's still lights. And because of that, your eye is constantly changing its focus in and out, in and out, in and out a little bit. And the blue blockers by blocking some of the blue light, it narrows kind of the wavelength spread of the light you're trying to look at, and it probably just helps that whole thing relax. So the short version is, which is too late for that, obviously, is, yeah, they probably work. You can't overwear them. The science is still out on exactly what they do, but if you're straining your eyes by not wearing them, you're not hurting your eyes in a meaningful way. You're not creating cataract. You're not creating macular degeneration. You're just straining your eyes a little bit.
So that brings us to the next topic that obviously comes to my mind, and that's screen time, phones, which you talked about there. From my personal experience, I feel like the more I've read my phone, the worse my eyes have gotten. And maybe that's because you can bump up fonts and things like that. I don't know if your eyes get lazy. I'm asking layman's questions here on this one.
I love
so
it.
If you could walk me through the phone portion of that, screen time and how that can impact your eyes negatively.
All right. So the first thing you have to understand is you're not a young man anymore.
I'm not?
No. You're my age, so I know how old you are. So most of us lose our flexibility in our eyes from age 40 to 60. So when we think of reading glasses, most of us think in terms of the magnification the reading glasses give us. But in reality, what it's doing is it's giving us a comfortable working distance away. So most people our age, mid-50s, we like to hold things quite far away. That's when our eyes can relax and we can not be straining to see. But most of us, when we pick up our phone to read it, the thing about the phone is you're usually just looking at it for a few seconds at a time, so you kind of get away with it. So, but we usually hold it a foot or so away.
We do.
And the longer you hold something a foot or so away at our age, it's going to be uncomfortable. Someone 45 years old is going to have less discomfort with that. Someone 35 years old should have almost no discomfort with that at all. However, one of the things that they're learning is in children, while the eye is still developing, if they do a lot of near work, and these studies are out, and huge studies out of China especially, kids who do a lot of reading will make themselves nearsighted compared to their peers. And interestingly, over the last year or so, data is coming out of COVID shutdown when schools were closed and kids were at home all the time, and they were learning, but they were looking at their computer screen. Mm-hmm. And then what is the average, I have a 15-year-old son, what does the average 12, 13, 14, 15-year-old do when class is out of session and they get to take a little break? They go on their phone. So they can spend 6, 8, 10 hours a day never looking more than 4 or 5 feet away. And what they're finding is there's an increased risk of nearsightedness over the last year or two, and COVID is contributing to it, not the COVID disease itself, but the lockdown and doing all of your schoolwork virtually and not going outside and playing street hockey with 10 kids in a neighborhood because you're not supposed to be near anybody.
So the actual byproduct of that is nearsightedness can be manufactured.
Yeah.
When you ordinarily wouldn't be even anywhere near that.
Or it can be worsened.
Or worsened,
so if you can take a kid that would be like a little nearsighted, you put them in this environment and they end up a lot more nearsighted than they're supposed to be. But it's an interesting, you know, chicken and egg thing is, you know, when we were in school, especially before like contact lenses were big, you know, you had the kid who liked to read a lot who didn't like to play baseball. Well, did he read a lot because he was nearsighted and wasn't good at baseball? Or did he become nearsighted because he read a lot because he didn't play baseball? So you don't know what caused
it's
what.
It's one or the other, yeah. But it's true. There's a lot of truth to that.
Yeah.
Let's look now as far as, you know, one of the things that was brought up in discussions before we went on this, you know, we talked about COVID and the screen time, the things with the kids and everything else, and even for people to get in and get looked at on an annual basis. If you were to recommend anything for anybody in 2022 that maybe they haven't done for their eyes, what would that be?
Well, the biggest thing is to get your routine checked. So with just like I know and talking to Matt, the CEO of Hudson Physicians, over the last couple of years, a lot of people just put stuff on hold because of COVID. And just it's the time to just get back on track to take care of yourself, the stuff you're supposed to do, get back in to see your dentist, get back in to see your primary care doctor, get back in to get your eyes checked, and just get back on track with that stuff.
That has definitely been something that Matt Brand has spoken a lot about. Mm-hmm. You know, he said the numbers have been so high each week now because mm-hmm. people are starting to. It really does feel at least people are getting infected. It's still out there. Mm-hmm. But it feels as though people are like, okay, we got to get on with things here mm-hmm. and, you know, do what we have to do. Mm-hmm. And that's obviously one of the things they have to do. So obviously you have an office here at mm-hmm. Hudson Physicians, and you'll be moving over to the new building, which is going to afford you the ability to have more than one person at a
right.
time. And you're in Stillwater and Woodbury,
yes.
among other things. So from your perspective, your thoughts on Hudson Physicians and the new building, why you're here mm-hmm. and how that's good for your practice.
Great. So this, I mean, it's good for our practice. It's good for the community in general. So, you know, we're so excited to go into this new building just across the way. So we are in a space at Hudson Hospital. We're in an independent space. It's our smallest office of our five full-time offices. So like our Stillwater office, for instance, we can have four doctors working at a time. We have enough rooms, enough waiting room space, et cetera. Here in Hudson Hospital, we have enough room for one doctor to be working. So as the community grows and we want to have a larger footprint here, we want to take care of more patients to fill the need, we can't. We don't have the ability to see more patients than we're currently seeing. So we heard that Hudson Physicians was doing this move and this huge, beautiful new building that has a surgery center in it and the partnership with Twin Cities Orthopedics and a group of independent-minded primary care physicians who understand the importance of making sure that their patients get their teeth checked and get their eyes checked and things like that. It's a great partnership opportunity for us. So not only will we be able to see more patients and provide a more comprehensive service, but we look at this as our Western Wisconsin hub now.
Yeah.
So as this part of the state, this part of the River Valley area is growing, you know, there are eye doctors here. There's some very good eye doctors here. Some groups like Christensen Eye Clinic and Ritzinger Eye Clinic are really very good groups of eye doctors. But no ophthalmologist group between basically where we are in Stillwater and Woodbury and all the way to like Eau Claire, Wisconsin.
Really?
So there's a hole where there's no real like established group of ophthalmologists like we are. So this area is growing. So for years, when this area wasn't growing, it wasn't huge, you could get by with asking people to drive to Eau Claire or drive into Stillwater, drive into St. Paul, but those days are gone. This area is growing, and the community here is going to demand to have the types of services that a Woodbury has or an Edina has or a St. Paul has, so we can provide it.
Well, the one thing that I can say, it's been 2 years since I've been putting together programming and videos or whatever we've been doing with Matt and the group here, is the connectivity to the community is special mm-hmm. in that I really do feel like they've done a good job in presenting themselves as a resource, not just to come in and be checked and do the things, but as a community pillar in that mm-hmm. regard. I think if you build yourself up that way and you deliver and execute, then people are just really comfortable coming in. I think the biggest thing with people and any healthcare is getting up the nerve to go and bothering to go. Mm-hmm. Because we were talking about denial and those kinds of things, right? So I think if they do the things that they do and you do the things that you do, it just becomes like a beacon mm-hmm. of whatever you need in the community, and they do tons of good for the community. Mm-hmm. To me, that'd be a great thing to be a part of.
Sure. I mean, look at this podcast. I mean, this is obviously the first one I'm doing, probably the last one.
No,
I'm doing.
You're great.
But, you know, the fact that Hudson Physicians does this, I mean, what primary care doctor groups are going to take the time and energy and put in the resources to get the word out to their patient population and the communities they serve of all the things that they're doing. It's amazing.
I cannot tell you the things, doctor, that I've learned from,
yeah.
you know, Matt was saying our number one, maybe this will be the number one now, I think, was we talked about veins and the whole varicose vein thing and all of that. And I knew nothing about it. But the funny part was, so then when I left, I'm like,
yeah.
Do I have heavy legs? you know, but you start thinking,
yeah.
you start talking yourself into it. Not
yeah.
really, but it was really, I think just from just one person, me sitting here, just what I've learned, even from you today, is incredible.
Yeah.
And I think if people happen upon these podcasts, you're driving from point A to point B, what we're talking about, what we're suggesting here, everybody either has an issue that's around this or knows someone with right next to them in the car that does.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't go very far.
Right.
So that's the key part. When you got into the business, how was it in terms of, let's say, just for crude terms, patient acquisition? Like, how did you guys go about 1995 getting customers, so to speak?
Oh, so the Associated Eye Care, the group I'm in, so I've been here 26 years. This year, 1992, next year, is our 50th year. So there was 24 years of history prior to my being there. And they had name recognition. And honestly, there was capacity. And when I joined, you know, somebody would call up and say, hey, I want an eye exam. And the person at the front desk would say, you know, do you care who you see? And they'd say, no, I just want to see somebody on a Thursday afternoon. It's like, well, Dr. Schwartz is free.
Bing.
So, yeah, exactly. I mean, it was as little as that. So I joined a group that had a good enough reputation and name recognition that people heard of them and they came. And that's why I joined the group I did, is because I wanted to join a group where I didn't have to spend a lot of time peddling to try to get patients to come in.
Which I think would be hard. So you did your research, for sure. What we're getting down to the end here, but this is one I'd love to know. What have been the things that stand out to you in your career so far of 26 years of doing this that you never would have imagined when you were in med school and then doing your residency at the University of Minnesota? What stands out to you as being, wow, this has been really worth it?
So I think it's a little bit of what we touched on before, which is how we are able to fix a problem in a way that is so minimally invasive now and has such nice results. So, you know, cataract is a problem. So compare that to like appendicitis. So let's say you have appendicitis and you go in and you need to get your appendix taken out. Now the technology for that's a lot better than when I was in medical school. It's done laparoscopically, et cetera. But still, at the end of the day, you're left with a scar and some right lower left quadrant pain that lasts for a few days, and you don't even remember having an appendix.
Exactly.
And it's like I get it. The surgeon saved your life and did you a solid, but you know, it was a bit uncomfortable. You weren't any better afterwards than before you got the appendicitis, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Cataract's different. So the cataract develops over time, or if you want LASIK, or if you have glaucoma, or if you have a retinal tear or something. And usually the procedure we do is not horribly uncomfortable, and the downtime is so short, and the upside of what their life is like after is so great. So I compare it to, like, obstetrics. You know, there are a few procedural doctors that patients are excited to see them. They're excited to have a procedure done. They're excited with what they get to go home from their procedure with. You know, an obstetrician, you know, that patient goes home with a baby. Us, that patient goes home with great vision. And it's that type of fun to be an ophthalmologist, where not only are we making people better, but we're doing it in a way that makes them better than they were before, and in a way that has very, very little downtime and risk for them.
How exciting is that for you to be able to go to work every day?
Yeah, it's fun.
Know that and feel it, and then that's got to affect your everyday life too,
yeah.
You know, because you love what you do.
Yeah.
And for a patient or someone that needs to come see you and in your group, that's got to be completely rewarding, make you feel comfortable and good about that. That's a huge positive. I'm going to rewind one more question you brought up when you're talking about your answer there. Just for clarification, LASIK versus the other surgeries. Can you tell us what the differences are and what LASIK does versus the other stuff, or do you use LASIK to execute those other processes?
So LASIK is a procedure. So LASIK is an acronym that stands for laser-assisted intrastromal keratomalusis. It uses a laser, but the procedure itself is called LASIK. So the people who named it 20 years ago, they were confusing about it. But what LASIK does is it takes away your need to wear glasses. So if LASIK works right, which it almost always does, you can take someone, usually it's someone between the ages of kind of 20 and 50, who either wears glasses or contact lenses, usually to drive and do normal activities. Most people, it's the type of people who put on a pair of glasses in the morning and wear them all day long. and or context. And it's a 10-minute procedure where when we're done, they shouldn't have to wear glasses anymore. So it's a 10-minute surgical procedure that gives them the type of vision that they used to have to rely on glasses or contact lenses to have.
Got it. And that's been around, what, about 20 years maybe?
Yeah, LASIK, the initial lasers got approved by the FDA in 95, and then for a different procedure, and then LASIK kind of took over like 98, 99. So how many years is that, like 22, 23?
I remember hearing it come out.
And I'm yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
It is cool.
But I'm not doing it. You know? No, but I mean, because I remember when it first came out going, yeah. Whoa, we'll let other people.
So I had a 98.
You
so
did?
So I, like I said at the beginning of this, so what drew me to eye care is like that was my exposure to the medical community, medical profession when I was young. So I, in 1998, when I was 32 years old, I got LASIK. And my friends and colleagues who were eye doctors who were doing LASIK said to me, a lot of them, more than one, Gary, you're crazy.
Yeah, because
what
are
you doing?
And
they were doing it on people. But after a few years, they got it on themselves. But they're like, geez, Gary, you're really early adopter on this stuff. It's like, I can't wait to have this. This is like,
that's
pretty
I've been
cool. looking forward to this for years.
Were you glad you did it?
Loved it. I've been essentially glasses free for, 23 years, 24
Amazing.
Years?
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. All of this stuff can happen with you.
Yeah.
And everything you guys do. And it's absolutely fascinating. Yeah. I could talk to you for hours here. But I think we're good. I not that anybody's dropping off. I think they're hanging on.
I thought we were gonna talk about hockey for a while.
Well, that's next. We're gonna talk about Ray Bourque and Phil Esposito and the whole thing.
Number 7 shaped pool in his backyard.
Oh, that's so good. Well, Dr. Gary Schwartz, thank you for joining us here today from Associated Eye Care.
This was fun. Thanks.
Thank you. And be sure to stop by, see his team. Here in Hudson, also Stillwater and Woodbury if you're in the surrounding area. Okay. Plenty of options for people to see you guys.
Thanks.
All right, that's going to do it for today's Optimal Health. I'm Pete Wagner. So long, everybody.